Well, we're in a message series from the Old Testament book of Ecclesiastes. The title of the series is Soul Search, and the title of today's message is Relationships Matter. And what we're doing is we're eavesdropping in on King Solomon as he shows us his quest, his search for meaning and purpose in life. And he'll hold up a number of cards and say, you know, is it love? Does love matter? Will money satisfy? Is it pleasure? Maybe it's the ideal job or work. And what is it that will satisfy? And he keeps mentioning one possibility after another, and he says, no. And where he's going is that ultimate satisfaction is only found in a relationship with the true and living God. Most of the time, he's wearing his cynic's hat, but occasionally he'll take off the cynic hat and he'll put on his teacher hat, and he'll talk to us about what does ultimately matter. And today, he will spend a little time letting us know that in the midst of a crazy, topsy-turvy, fallen, sometimes cynical world, that relationships really do matter. I've got two simple points today, and here's the first one. Maximize your investment in key relationships. Maximize your investment in key relationships. You know, if you're a sports fan, particularly pro golf, you know that golfer Phil Mickelson made headlines last month because of something he did not do. He did not play in the U.S. Open. He intentionally withdrew so that he could attend his daughter Amanda's high school graduation. Now, Solomon would look at that and say, attaboy, way to go for choosing relationships over accomplishments. Now, Phil Mickelson is a five-time major winner. There are four major tournaments in golf: the British Open, the U.S. Open, the PGA, and the Masters. Mickelson has won the Masters three times. He's won the PGA, and he's won the British Open. The one tournament he's never won, although he's finished second six times, is the U.S. Open. And if he could just win one U.S. Open, he would become only the sixth professional golfer of all time to win the career Grand Slam, to win at least, you know, one of the four, to win all four majors. So he's 47 years old. The window of opportunity is shrinking, but he said, I'm not going to miss my daughter's high school graduation. He said, as I look back on life, this is a moment I'll always cherish and be glad I was present. So here's what Solomon has to say. Two are just better than one. Relationships matter. And Solomon looks out and he sees so many people choosing things and accomplishments over people. And he says, don't be an Ebenezer Scrooge. Don't be the kind of person who purposely chooses accomplishments and things over relationships. You may be lonely, but don't be lonely on purpose and by choice. To the contrary, be that loving, giving, kind, servant-hearted family member and friend. So back to Ecclesiastes 4. Two are just better than one because they have a good return for their labor. Verse 10, if either of them falls down, one can help the other one. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. He said, when you're connected, when you're in community, when you're investing in your family, when you're investing with your friends, the highs are higher and the lows are never quite as low. And also, if two lie down together, they'll keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? In a room this size, some of you know what it's like to lose a job. Some of you know what it's like to deal with a sick child. Some of you've walked through a divorce. Some of you have walked through agonizing grief. Some of you have walked through serious health issues. And Solomon says, there's some situations in life that just can't be fixed, but having someone there with you in that ministry of presence makes it more bearable. And though one may be overpowered, verse 12, two can defend themselves, and a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. And that last phrase is interesting. Most scholars think he's saying, where you invite God into the relationship, where it's more than, it's you, you're there, I'm there, but we invite God into this relationship, that's a relationship that's not quickly broken. It's got extra energy to it. And you know what, gang? This is the genius of support groups and recovery groups, as they tap into the power of friendship and relationship at a core level, acknowledging our ability with God's presence to help each other with our hurts, our hang-ups, our habits. That's a huge stride forward. Some of you have some hurts and hang-ups and habits that need outside wisdom, outside energy that others can provide. And so I would ask you this morning, how long will you walk alone? How long will you struggle alone? And you may be here and you say, well, Ronnie, I don't really have an alcohol addiction or a drug addiction. No, but you might be addicted to cynicism. Or you're addicted to fear. You're addicted to faithlessness. And you need some people in your life on the plus side who are doing what spiritual friends do. You ready? They're helping you pay closer attention to God. They're helping you pay closer and closer attention to God. And so Solomon would say, maximize, in a crazy world, maximize your investment in key relationships. May I just meddle here for a moment? One of your key relationships is your marriage. How's your marriage? Is there an adult present in your marriage? You know, some marriages, there's not really an adult present. No one's taking responsibility. And, you know, one marriage counselor said, somebody came in, they said they want their marriage to be a 10. He said, well, the best you're going to get is a 3. Well, why? He said, because you're bringing 3 energy. You're bringing 3 game, and your spouse is bringing 3 energy. And most people, he said, if you just do what comes naturally, you go to a relationship, and you go, rather than going and saying, this is the place where I invest. This relationship is where I go and I invest fully. Most people go to a relationship and say, what can I take? In premarital counseling, I'll always go over with a couple and I'll say, now, you know, many times marriages get blamed for things where they shouldn't get blamed. There's a difference between a marriage problem and a me problem. If I've got big-time me problems, I got a drinking problem, a trust problem, I got a spending problem, I don't handle my anger well, whatever I feel like saying, I just say it, no filters. and if that's, you know, nobody's perfect, but there's a difference between imperfections that are felonies and imperfections that are misdemeanors. Imperfections that are misdemeanors, you can have a wonderful relationship. But imperfections that are felonies, I got out of control anger, out of control spending, out of control alcohol consumption, you know. And so I will ask you, you have a me problem. Is there an adult in your marriage? Hopefully there are two adults there, and you're saying, I will take responsibility for my words, I will take responsibility for my attitude, and I will take responsibility for what I'm investing in this relationship. And I want to encourage you, with all of your key relationships, at church, in your marriage, don't view that relationship as just, I go to take. This is the place where I invest. What about your kids? What about your extended family? You say, well, I think our children are happy. Well, I'm glad your children are happy. And in average families, parents want their children to be happy. But in fantastic families, parents want their children to know that the universe doesn't revolve around them. They want their children to know that they've been created and shaped by God for a mission and a calling in life. I think the TV show was called Touched by an Angel. I've probably seen half an episode in my life. I don't even know if it's still on TV. But there was a deal where there's like a senior angel, and they're overseeing like a junior angel, and this junior angel is about to sit down and wash the feet of an old man. And the old man is saying, "No, no, no, you don't need to wash my feet." But the junior angel said, "No, I do need to wash your feet, and here's why. It reminds me who I am." You see, when we serve, we keep being reminded that we're created to be servants. And so, as you invest in your family, as you invest in your marriage, and as you invest in your church family, maximize those key relationships, your investment in key relationships. Hopefully you have some friends in our church family. You have some good relationships here. If you don't, that's not unusual, but it's fixable. Lifeway Publishing did a study of churches, primarily in the southern United States. And here's what they found. They found that in most churches, when people were presented with this question, I have significant and meaningful relationships in my church. 45 to 50% of the respondents said, "No, I do not have significant and meaningful relationships in my church." But what Lifeway found was where people were engaged in a small group, that number went up to 90%. And so obviously you know where I'm going with this. I cannot underscore strongly enough the ministry of being connected in a consistent small group experience. You know, I wish I could tell you, a surefire way to make friends. It's an imprecise art. It just is. But I know this. You got to start paying attention to somebody else. You'll make more friends in 2 months by being interested in them than you will in 5 years by trying to get someone interested in you. So be interested in other people and show up with a physical presence in a consistent way. Somebody says, "Well, I love our group. I can't really be there, but we're there in spirit." No, you're not. If you're not there, physically there, you're not there. But where your physical presence is there with other people in a consistent way, those relationships can develop. And that's my prayer for you. That's my dream for you. I don't want you to experience the missing link, which is true in so many lives, which is the missing link for many is an intentionally formed, well-developed inner circle. And I hope that you will give energy to building those friendships that help you pay closer attention to the work of God in your life. And for some of those, you're going to have to protect them. I mean, if you're around anyone over any length of time, you're going to rub each other the wrong way. Your parenting styles are going to differ. There's going to be, some points of awkwardness and friction. And when those times come, you'll have to lean into the kind of 1 Corinthians 13 sort of love that's not easily offended and it's quick to forgive, because love covers over a multitude of sins, even the sins of people in your small group and in your family. Maximize your investment in your key relationships, it's worth it. Your marriage is worth it. Your family's worth it. Your church is worth it. And Solomon says, you will be so glad you did, because the benefits show up over the long haul. Now, very, very quickly, here's the second point. Minimize your attention to general input. Ecclesiastes 4. A poor youngster with some knowledge is better off than an old but foolish king who doesn't know which end is up. I saw a youth just like this start with nothing and go from rags to riches. And I think Solomon's talking about his dad, David. And I saw everyone rally to the rule of this young successor to the king. Even so, the excitement died quickly. The throngs of people, they soon lost interest. Can't you see it's only smoke and spitting into the wind? You see where he's going with this, don't you? Don't get caught up in the ridiculous and endless pursuit of popularity, because the mass opinion of people, it is so fickle. It's here today, it's gone tomorrow. Oh, everybody, we're on board with this new deal. And all the enthusiasm is going to fade and fade and fade. Some of the very same people who on Palm Sunday were saying, "Hail Jesus," on Crucifixion Friday, they're saying, "Nail Jesus." Solomon says, this is not something in which you want to get caught up. And later in chapter 7, he'll say it like this. Do not pay attention to every word people say, or you may hear your servant cursing you, for you know in your heart that many times you've cursed others. Everybody, we live in a world with no shortage of opinions. You can go online and give your opinion, give a star, give a thumbs up, give an attaboy, an attagirl to a restaurant, to a concert. You can even go online and give a review to this church, probably to this sermon, in which you will give it a thumbs up, right? You will give it a thumbs up. Everything in our world's rateable. Everything's up for review. Everything's open for critique and input. How many likes? How many people are for that? How many people gave it a star? Solomon knew what it was like to live for the opinions of others. And he knew that it's meaningless, it's fickle, it's faddish, it's chasing after the wind. It doesn't last, and it can change so quickly. And what one person loves, another one despises. What one person thinks is fantastic, another person thinks it's completely off the wall. And what one person thinks is just great, 2 months later, they may not. And you're going to wear yourself out trying to predict and respond and pivot and change to every last single thing someone says. And you end up tired, and you end up probably far from where you need to be. You certainly won't have stability. Now, so much of the Bible is about calling God's people away from what? Idolatry. And one idol that you may have in your life is everybody's opinion of you. And that's not a new thing. In the Gospel of John, it was said of the Pharisees, you ready? They loved the praise of people more than the praise of God. Now, sometimes you might hear somebody say, "That's right, Ronnie, I just don't care what anybody says about me." And I would say to you that I think that's immature. I think it's irresponsible. And if you don't care what people say, then you're never going to open yourself up to coaching, to input, to advice, to the possibility of learning and growing and developing. It's important that you be open to the input of others, but you must filter it. and the people who are wise and who love you and aren't just trying to tear you down, but they truly are for you and in your corner, you will listen to them, you will welcome them, and you might have a filter. And as Solomon would say, you're not going to listen to every voice. You're going to minimize generalized input. But input from wise people who care about you, that's key. You grow that way. But listen, do not be ruffled. Do not let the energy be taken out from under your feet and from your sails because of negative input that may come your way. In 1910, Theodore Roosevelt gave a speech in Paris. He said these words, "It is not the critic who counts. It is not the man who points out how the strong man stumbled or where the doer of deeds could have done better. The credit belongs to the person who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood. They have skin in the game, in other words. If he fails, if she fails, at least he fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat." Here's what you do. You stay rooted and grounded in what you know that God knows about you. You stay rooted and grounded in God's great, amazing, deep love for you. His opinion is the one that counts. His viewpoint is the one that counts. And it's His love for you that gives you your sense of identity and appropriate esteem. And you stay rooted and God's love for you, you stay rooted in God's purposes and God's call upon your life. You give maximum investment to those key relationships around you, your family, your children, your marriage, your church. And yeah, everybody's got an opinion about you, but you minimize generalized input. You stay true to God's call. You stay rooted in His love for you. Now, before I finish, I need to ask you a question. You do know, and would you acknowledge today that Jesus Christ is your best friend ever? You know that, don't you? No one will ever love you like Jesus. No one will ever do more for you than Jesus. And every friendship that we enjoy now, it's but a hint, but a taste of the kind of friendship that Jesus offers to us. And like a good friend, Jesus places our interests over His, and He is in our corner. He is willing to forgive us to the uttermost. He is willing to cleanse our souls completely. He will never leave you. He will never forsake you. And when you're in that dark corner, He is right there with you. And when you walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you need fear no evil. Not because you fully understand everything, but because He is with you and He will never forsake you. Somebody says, "I'd love to have a friend in high places." You do. You have a friend in the highest place. And so has your friendship with the Lord grown cold? Run back to Him today with renewed energy. The Bible says, God says, if you draw near to me, I'm going to draw near to you.